Chapter 80. Figure yourself. I have known my dear Chicket this 20 years. Chicket is my name of baptism, says the Baron. Baron Chicket the Punter is my name. And being a general at Franco, says Jemmy, means, I suppose, being a French general? Yes, I was, said he, General Baron de Punter Nestapaz, Aminade? Oh, yes, said Madame Flickflack, and laughed, and I and Jemmy laughed out of politeness. And a pretty laughing matter it was, as you shall hear. About this time my Jemmy became one of the lady patronesses of that admirable institution, the Washerwoman's Orphan's Home. Lady de Sudley was the great projector of it, and the manager and chaplain, the excellent and Reverend Sidney Slopper. His salary, as chaplain, and that of Dr. Leach, the physician, both cousins of her ladyship's, drew away £500 from the 6 subscribed to the charity. And Lady de Sudley thought a fete at Boulle Spa, with the aid of some of the foreign princes who were in town last year, might bring a little more money into its treasury. A tender appeal was accordingly drawn up, and published in all the papers. Appeal. British Washerwoman's Orphan's Home. The Washerwoman's Orphan's Home has now been established 7 years. And the good which it has effected is, it may be confidently stated, incalculable. 98 orphan children of washerwomen have been lodged within its walls. 102 British washerwomen have been relieved, when in the last state of decay. 198,000 articles of male and female dress have been washed, mended, buttoned, ironed, and mangled in the establishment. And, by an arrangement with the governors of the foundling, it is hoped that the baby linen of that hospital will be confided to the British Washerwoman's Home. With such prospects before it, is it not sad, is it not lamentable to think that the patronesses of the society have been compelled to reject the applications of no less than 3,801 British washerwomen, from lack of means for their support? Ladies of England, mothers of England, to you we appeal. Is there one of you that will not respond to the cry in behalf of these deserving members of our sex? It has been determined by the ladies' patronesses to give a fete at Boulle Spa on Thursday, July 25th, which will be graced with the first foreign and native talent, by the first foreign and native rank, and where they beg for the attendance of every washerwoman's friend. Her Highness the Princess of Schlappen-Zollern-Schwig-Meringen, the Duke of Saxe-Tübingen, His Excellency Baron Strumpf, His Excellency Lutf Ali Kulibis Milla Muhammad Rashid Allah, the Persian Ambassador, Prince Fatih Jah, Envoy from the King of Oud, His Excellency Don Alonso di Cachachero y Fandango y Castanet, the Spanish Ambassador, Count Gravioli, from Milan, the Envoy of the Republic of Topinambo, and a host of other fashionables, promised to honor the festival. And their names made a famous show in the bills. Besides these, we had the celebrated band of Moscow Musics, the 77 Transylvanian Trumpeters, and the famous Bohemian Minnesingers, with all the leading artists of London, Paris, the continent, and the rest of Europe. I leave you to fancy what a splendid triumph for the British Washerwoman's Home was to come off on that day. A beautiful tent was erected, in which the ladies' patronesses were to meet. It was hung round with specimens of the skill of the washerwomen's orphans, 96 of whom were to be feasted in the gardens, and waited on by the ladies' patronesses. Well, Jemmy and my daughter, Madame de Flickflack, myself, the Count, Baron Punter, Tug, and Tagrag, all went down in the chariot and barouche and four, quite eclipsing poor Lady Kilblazes and her carriage and two. There was a fine cold collation, to which the friends of the ladies' patronesses were admitted, after which, my ladies and their beau went strolling through the walks, Tagrag and the Count having each an arm of Jemmy, the Baron giving an arm apiece to Madame and Jemimran. Whilst they were walking, whom should they light upon, but poor Orlando Crump, my successor in the perfumery and hair-cutting. Orlando, says Jemimran, blushing as red as a label, and holding out her hand. Jemima, says he, holding out his, and turning as white as pomatum. Sir, says Jemmy, as stately as a duchess. What? Madam, says poor Crump, don't you remember your shop boy? Dearest mama, don't you recollect Orlando? Whimpers Jemimran, whose hand he had got hold of. Miss Tuggeridge Cox, says Jemmy, I'm surprised of you. Remember, sir, that our position is altered, and oblige me by no more familiarity. Insolent fellow, says the Baron, that is this canaille? Canal yourself, Mounseer, says Orlando, now grown quite furious. He broke away, quite indignant, and was soon lost in the crowd. Jemimran, as soon as he was gone, began to look very pale and ill, and her mama, therefore, took her to a tent, where she left her along with Madame Flickflack and the Baron, going off herself with the other gentlemen, in order to join us. It appears they had not been seated very long, when Madame Flickflack suddenly sprung up, with an exclamation of joy, and rushed forward to a friend whom she saw pass. The Baron was left alone with Jemimran, and, whether it was the champagne, or that my dear girl looked more than commonly pretty, I don't know, but Madame Flickflack had not been gone a minute, when the Baron dropped on his knees, and made her a regular declaration. Poor Orlando Crump had found me out by this time, and was standing by my side, listening, as melancholy as possible, to the famous Bohemian minnesingers, who were singing the celebrated words of the poet Goethe. C.H. Binya up Lily Lee, do Bistia up Lily Lee. Were signed Dutch up Lily Lee, up La Lily Lee. Chorus yodel odel 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 up. Yodel odel o o o. They were standing with their hands in their waistcoats, as usual, and had just come to the o o, at the end of the chorus of the 47th stanza, when Orlando started colon that's a scream. Says he. Indeed it is, says I, and, but for the fashion of the thing, a very ugly scream too. When I heard another shrill H, as I thought, and Orlando bolted off, crying, by heavens, it's her voice. Ho's voice? Says one. Oh man, see the row, says Tag. And off we went, with a considerable number of people, who saw this strange move on his part. We came to the tent, and there we found my poor Jemimran fainting, her mama holding a smelling bottle, the Baron, on the ground, holding a handkerchief to his bleeding nose, and Orlando squaring at him, and calling on him to fight if he dared. My Jemmy looked at Crump very fierce. Take that feller away, says she. He has insulted a French nobleman, and deserves transportation, at the least. Poor Orlando was carried off. Of no patience with the little minx, says Jemmy, giving Jemimran a pinch. He might be a baron's lady, and she screams out, because his excellency did, but squeeze her hand. Oh, mama, mama, sobs poor Jemimran, but he was tipsy. Tipsy. And the more shame for you, you hussy, to be offended with a nobleman who does not know what he is doing. A tournament. I say, Tug, said McTurk, one day soon after our flare-up at Bula, Kilblazes comes of age in October, and then we'll cut you out, as I told you. The old barbaress will die of spite when she hears what we are going to do. What do you think? We're going to have a tournament. Hats a tournament? Says Tug, and so said his mama when she heard the news. And when she knew what a tournament was, I think, really, she was as angry as McTurk said she would be, and gave us no peace for days together. Hat, says she, dress up in armor, like play actors, and run at each other with spears? The Kilblazes must be mad. And so I thought, but I didn't think the Tuggeridges would be mad too, as they were. For, when Jemmy heard that the Kilblazes festival was to be, as yet, a profound secret, what does she do but send down to the Morning Post a flaming account of the passage of arms at Tegarajeviil? The days of chivalry are not past. The fair castellan of TGGRGville, whose splendid entertainments have so often been alluded to in this paper, has determined to give one, which shall exceed in splendor even the magnificence of the Middle Ages. We are not at liberty to say more, but a tournament, at which His Excellency B.R.N. de P.N.T.R. and Thomas T.G.R.G. Esquire, eldest son of Sir T.H.S.T.G.R.G., are to be the knight's defendants against all comers. A queen of beauty, of whose loveliness every frequenter of fashion has felt the power, a banquet, unexampled in the annals of Gunther, and a ball, in which the recollections of ancient chivalry will blend sweetly with the soft tones of weeper and colonnet, are among the entertainments which the Ladia of T.G.G. Ridgeville has prepared for her distinguished guests. The Baron was the life of the scheme. He longed to be on horseback, and in the field at Tuggeridgeville, where he, Tagrag, and a number of our friends practiced. He was the very best tilter present. He vaulted over his horse, and played such wonderful antics, as never were done except at Ducrow's. And now, oh, that I had 20 pages, instead of this short chapter, to describe the wonders of the day. 24 knights came from Ashley's at 2 guineas a head. We were in hopes to have had Miss Wolford in the character of Joan of Arc, but that lady did not appear. We had a tent for the challengers, at each side of which hung what they called escutcheons, like hatchments, which they put up when people die, and underneath sat their pages, holding their helmets for the tournament. Tagrag was in brass armor. My city connections got him that famous suit, His Excellency in polished steel. My wife wore a coronet, modeled exactly after that of Queen Catherine, in Henry V, a tight gilt jacket, which set off dear Jemmy's figure wonderfully, and a train of at least 40 feet. Dear Jemimrin was in white, her hair braided with pearls. Madame de Flickflack appeared as Queen Elizabeth, and Lady Blanche Blunos as a Turkish princess. An alderman of London and his lady, two magistrates of the county, and the very pink of Croydon, several Polish noblemen, two Italian counts besides our count, 110 young officers, from Addiscombe College, in full uniform, commanded by Major General Sir Miles Mulligatawny, K.C.C. B., and his lady, the Mrs. Pimini's finishing establishment, and 14 young ladies, all in white. The Reverend Dr. Wapshot, and 49 young gentlemen, of the first families, under his charge, were some only of the company. I leave you to fancy that, if my Jemmy did seek for fashion, as he had enough of it on this occasion. They wanted me to have mounted again, but my hunting day had been sufficient. Besides, I ain't big enough for a real knight. So, as Mrs. Cox insisted on my opening the tournament and I knew it was in vain to resist, the Baron and Tagrag had undertaken to arrange, so that I might come off with safety, if I came off at all. They had procured from the Strand Theatre a famous stud of hobby horses, which they told me had been trained for the use of the great Lord Bateman. I did not know exactly what they were till they arrived. But as they had belonged to a lord, I thought it was all right, and consented. And I found it the best sort of riding, after all, to appear to be on horseback, and walk safely afoot at the same time. And it was impossible to come down, as long as I kept on my own legs. Besides, I could cuff, and pull my steed about as much as I liked, without fear of his biting or kicking in return. As lord of the tournament, they placed in my hands a lance, ornamented spirally, in blue and gold. I thought of the pole over my old shop door, and almost wished myself there again, as I capered up to the battle in my helmet and breastplate, with all the trumpets blowing, and drums beating at the time. Captain Tagrag was my opponent, and preciously we poked each other, till, prancing about, I put my foot on my horse's petticoat behind, and down I came, getting a thrust from the captain, at the same time, that almost broke my shoulder bone. His was sufficient, they said, for the laws of chivalry, and I was glad to get off so. After that the gentlemen riders, of whom there were no less than seven, in complete armor, and the professionals, now ran at the ring, and the Baron was far, far the most skillful. "How sweetly the dear Baron rides," said my wife, who was always ogling at him, smirking, smiling, and waving her handkerchief to him. "Say, Sam," says a professional to one of his friends, as, after their course, they came cantering up, and ranged under Jemmy's power, as she called it. "Say, Sam, I'm blowed if that chap in armor mustn't have been one of us." And this only made Jemmy the more pleased. For the fact is, the Baron had chosen the best way of winning Jim Imran by courting her mother. The Baron was declared conqueror at the ring, and Jemmy awarded him the prize, a wreath of white roses, which he placed on his lance, he receiving it gracefully, and bowing, until the plumes of his helmet mingled with the mane of his charger, which backed to the other end of the lists. Then galloping back to the place where Jim Imran was seated, he begged her to place it on his helmet. The poor girl blushed very much, and did so. As all the people were applauding, Tagrag rushed up, and, laying his hand on the Baron's shoulder, whispered something in his ear, which made the other very angry, I suppose, for he shook him off violently. "Jack and poor soy," says he, "Monsieur de Tagrag," which means, I am told, every man for himself. And then he rode away, throwing his lance in the air, catching it, and making his horse caper and prance, to the admiration of all beholders. After this came the assage of arms. Tagrag and the Baron ran courses against the other champions, and unhorsed two apiece, whereupon the other three refused to turn out, and preciously we laughed at them, to be sure. "Now, it's our turn, Mr. Chicket," says Tagrag, shaking his fist at the Baron Colon. "Look to yourself, you infernal mountebank, for, by Jupiter, I'll do my best." And before Jemmy and the rest of us, who were quite bewildered, could say a word, these two friends were charging away, spears in hand, ready to kill each other. In vain Jemmy screamed. In vain I threw down my truncheon. They had broken two poles, before I could say Ack Robinson, and were driving at each other with the two new ones. The Baron had the worst of the first course, for he had almost been carried out of his saddle. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.